Michael Reed on LMFM.
If you were listening to us yesterday, you'd have heard us speak with People Before Profit TD, Gino Kennedy, who has sponsored the Dying with Dignity Bill, and in particular the opposition to the proposed legislation from the Catholic Church. A statement from the bishops, or at least a submission from the bishops, which is a very detailed submission, is opposing this proposed bill because it runs radically counter to the common good. And it says that while it doesn't use the term suicide, the bill is essentially about making provision for a person who wishes to end his or her life to make a formal declaration to that effect and to seek medical assistance in doing so.
I mean, suicide was decriminalised in 1993.
Mm.
So, you know, because before, if, you know, it was a crime to commit suicide, which is quite incredible when you think about it. And I think the terminology that some organisations are using in relation to voluntary assisted dying is very unfortunate, because it's not suicide. It shouldn't be conflated. It's two issues. So it's very kind of just unfortunate that they've used that. Other jurisdictions have legislated for that. Just recently, Portugal are putting legislation through to basically legalise voluntary assisted dying. And there are people like that, the bishops' organisation, that will object to it on all sorts of grounds.
Mm.
But yeah, I say, Michael, like in the last 25 years, the Catholic Church, and I'm not kind of, I was like most people in Ireland, we were brought up as Catholics, and I do, I suppose I still have some Christian values, but you know, the last 25 years, the Catholic Church has been way behind, you know, public opinion on a lot of issues. Like, think about it, like divorce, marriage equality, contraception, you know, for repealing the eight, they've always been behind it, against it.
Gino Kenny speaking to me yesterday. Let's hear from the bishops now. Bishop Kevin Doran, the Bishop of Elphin, is on the line. And a very good morning to you, Bishop, and thanks for joining us on the programme this morning. Do you believe that the church is falling behind public opinion on this particular issue?
Well, I don't think so, to be honest. But I suppose the primary mission of the church is not to promote public opinion. The primary mission of the church is to proclaim the gospel and to, I suppose, to help people to reflect on the ultimate meaning of human existence. And I suppose no more important a group, I suppose, in a sense, to be supported in that way than people who are in the final stages of terminal illness and who inevitably face questions about the meaning of their lives and where they're going to from here.
Mm.
So I suppose, in a sense, one of the difficulties we would have straight up about assisted suicide is that, or any form of euthanasia, is that it actually puts an end to any prospect of people who are terminally ill, you know, coming to a richer understanding of the meaning of their lives in the face of their experience of suffering, because obviously once their life is ended, any prospect of further growth or understanding is taken away. But my own experience as a pastor, right, for the last 40 odd years, has been that I've seen people with a terminal illness going through the different stages of the process of dying, and you know, sometimes being you know, very discouraged, depressed, angry, and so on, you know, in the face of a diagnosis, but working through that with the support of family and palliative care, and coming to a point of peace in the face of their death, and I've seen this time and time again. So you know, straight up, I think the idea that someone would you know, push a button or press a needle or whatever it is to put a stop to that, you know, completely undermines the journey of somebody. Which and clearly one has to acknowledge that nobody would choose terminal illness. But I mean,
well, of course not.
That's a different thing.
Yeah, but I mean, if it was permitted, not everybody would choose to end their lives either. But there are some who would, because they wouldn't want to live out their last days in pain and discomfort and without dignity and so on. And some of those people would be appealing for mercy.
This is the thing about the word dignity. You know, the bill is called the Dying with Dignity Bill, but actually it's not about dying with dignity, you know, because a human dignity is something that we have by nature. It's not given to us by anybody, and it doesn't disappear when people become sick. I mean, recently enough, I spent some time with a person, a lady who was seriously ill, and in the final days of her life, you know, she was engaging with issues connected with her family. She was she was finishing a piece of knitting for one member of the family, and she was praying.
Is it not subjective, Bishop?
I beg your pardon?
Is it not subjective as to whether you feel you have dignity in...
No, because dignity is God-given. Our dignity doesn't come from somebody else. Our dignity comes from the fact that we're created in the image and likeness of God, and that we're destined for something more than this life, that we're destined for eternal life. And nobody can take that away from us.
Mm.
And people have lived, you know, many people have lived in very...
What if you don't feel that way, though?
Oh, no, I mean, that's a different thing, how you feel.
Yeah. And that's clearly what I mean by it being subjective.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, clearly people have the potential to, you know, to feel all sorts of things in the face of terminal illness, or indeed in the face of lots of other challenging circumstances in life. And the challenge for us as a civilised society is to help people, work through that. I mean, what's very interesting is that one of the images that the church uses and which is presented to us in the gospel in relation to our care for people is the image of the Good Samaritan. And the essential thing about the Good Samaritan was that he stopped and he crossed over and he stayed with the guy who was wounded and attacked on the side of the road, and he looked after him. And essentially, I suppose a compassionate society is one that is prepared to walk with people and indeed even to suffer with them. That's what the word compassion means. But if assisted suicide is about saying, I recognise that your life has no further value, therefore I'll help you to end it. But it's not about journeying with anybody. It's not compassionate.
But if somebody is asking for that compassion, if somebody is appealing for mercy, in their subjective viewpoint, it is compassionate, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the palliative care specialists who are also obviously opposing this bill, in large numbers, would argue that in many cases, the majority of cases where people ask for euthanasia, what they're basically saying is, I don't want to go on living like this. I can remember my mother, God rest her, when she had dementia. She used to say, I wish I were dead. Or indeed, when she had serious arthritis, she used to sometimes say, I wish I was dead. But she didn't mean she wished she was dead. She just wished she didn't have to go on living like this.
And you'd hear people talking about loved ones in that situation and saying, I wish God would take them.
But the thing at the end of the day is that with the possibilities that are offered, many people, I suppose, including family members, when they're faced with the reality of terminal illness in the family, they haven't come across this before, and they probably don't know a lot about what palliative care can offer.
Mm.
And palliative care, it's not just about pain relief in the crude sense. It's also about providing the space that allows people to be heard. You know, it creates a space for communication, respectful communication, listening to people's concerns, easing their anxieties, helping them to resolve unfinished business, including sometimes family reconciliations, and I've seen that happen.
Mm.
And part of that, obviously, sometimes can be the healing of their relationship with God, and it's not the primary focus, but it's certainly one of the things.
Does that apply to somebody who has just been diagnosed with a degenerative brain disease, just to follow on from the example that you gave a moment ago, and they're perfectly well today, but they know that they're facing into quite possibly years of being somebody who is unrecognisable in terms of the person they are today, who will, to all intents and purposes, have lost their mind or the mind that they have today and want to be remembered as the person they are today?
Well, I mean, inevitably, the challenge here is understanding and care on the one hand from others and courage certainly from people you know who are ill because it's not easy to face into a serious illness. But again, all I can say is that when people live through the experience of terminal illness with the support of palliative care, they discover, in fact, that it needn't be like that.
But in the case of somebody who has a degenerative brain disease, it quite often is.
There are certainly moments of sadness and pain and stress associated with. But I mean, I can remember sitting with my mother, when she was in full blown dementia, and we were doing the crossword together. Mm. She was even better at it at that point than I was. Mm. And in many ways, the if you take the time to be with somebody and to sit with them, which is obviously one of the big challenges in our society, that because of the pressure of life today, people feel they don't have time, and that affects the way we look after the care of children as well as the care of the elderly and so on. But the reality is you find that the person that you thought was lost is in there and can sometimes be helped to express themselves very richly.
Mm. I suppose
The difficulty you see about all of this assisted suicide thing as well is that what the bill is asking is that doctors and nurses will actively engage themselves in in the
end. I did mention that in the conversation with Gino Kenny yesterday, and he said that there should be conscientious objection and that there is a clause to allow for that in his legislation.
There is a clause that allows them to say that they don't want to be part of it, but it requires immediately in the next clause that they refer the patient to somebody else who will do it. So what you're saying is, there's something which I believe is fundamentally contrary to good medical practice and contrary to to morality, and now I'm going to refer my patient to somebody else to do it because I won't do it myself. I mean, there's completely complete lack of logic in that.
I can understand what you mean, Bishop. I don't mean it to be disrespectful, but I mean the same applies to abortion.
Absolutely, exactly the same. That's part of the problem.
Other moral questions, but when they become the law of the land, they are a health service, and people are entitled to those services.
Well, so you see, the law of the land has to respect the common good, but and ultimately the role of the state, and the sole ultimate purpose of the state, to stop us all from just being selfish individualists, is to serve the common good. I mean, this is precisely the point we're making.
But many would argue that the common good is that you should have the right to avail of the services that are legally available to you.
No, through
the state and not be denied those services because of somebody else's moral questions in relation to those services.
But for you to be provided with that option affects a lot of other people as well. Mm. I've already mentioned the healthcare professionals, who are put in a position, completely going against the essential, purpose of healthcare, which is to heal. Mm. But also, and again, of course, the bill tells us that that this is only going to be for the few who clearly say they want it. But the reality is that once you accept the principle that one person can be directly involved in taking the life of another person, then the question obviously arises is why would you limit that to people who are terminally ill? Suppose somebody else comes along and says, "Well, I don't feel life is worth living anymore. Why can't I get help?"
Indeed, and there are a lot of concerns about the safeguards.
And the reality is, if you go to look at the legislation in countries that have previously permitted assisted suicide, you find that that legislation has very quickly extended to include people with intellectual disabilities and people on the autistic spectrum and young people who are not in a position to make up their minds themselves, so somebody else decides that they're going to be assisted in
and they're the safeguards that should be in place to stop that. But you heard Gino Kenny speak at the outset. I take it that there's no prospect of him convincing you to look on this or describe it as anything other than suicide.
No, because I mean, I do understand that that in a space where they are distressed and anxious, people can sometimes make decisions which are not the right decision. But you could say that morally speaking, you can understand that they make it in the face of fear or whatever. But there's no such justification for legislators or for healthcare professionals who are not faced with the same stress and who agree to go along with something like this. We need to be able to offer people something much better.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. Yeah.
Thanks a million. God bless.
Thank you. That's Bishop Kevin Doran, who's the Bishop of Elphin.
Michael Reid on LMFM.